All right, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. Welcome to Ben Franklin Behavioral Health Advisory Committee meeting, March 14th. The members of the committee could introduce themselves. That would be great.
Matt Rasmussen, Benton County Commissioner.
Brian Ace, Benton County Citizen Rep.
Jason Bliss, Benton County.
Michelle Gerber, Recovery Coalition, Becky Gross, Franklin County.
Jason Valentine, proxy for Mike Gonzalez for Franklin County.
Oh, this is Wally, representing my party for Glossier.
Backcourt, Benton County Sheriff's Office.
Kevin Crowley, Franklin County Fire and EMS.
Emma Trick, Pike County.
John Roach, Franklin County.
Kyle Sullivan, Human Services.
BJ Olson, Franklin County. And there's somebody on the phone.
It's Angie Manarola.
You received the minutes for the February meeting. Any questions or comments or corrections?
Motion to accept the minutes as printed.
It's been moved to.
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion? Those in favor say aye. Opposed? Motion carries. This is an opportunity for public comment, and you will have another opportunity after the committee does its business. Is there anybody that would like to address the committee this afternoon? All right, moving on. Matt, an update on Recovery Center.
So the progress through the validation phase with the design build contractor continues. We have narrowed down the space that we would prefer to occupy for the four programs that we're looking at initially. So now they are going through a detailed engineering analysis of that area to identify any unknown conditions such as walls that can't be moved and utility requirements and structural condition and those kind of things to ensure that if we are to utilize those spaces, that we won't have any surprises as we get into the construction phase of that. So we are still on track to see schematic level floor plans towards the end of the month. We may end up with more than one option on that as they finish the validation phase. They may present two options that we get to choose from at the end. So, but we're expecting to see that. We had to give them an extra week to finish that to allow them to do some more work on their engineering analysis. So instead of March 15th, we're originally expecting those tomorrow. It's going to be the end of next week. See how that goes. Once we get that, we'll start working through the last details, and then we solidify what they call the guaranteed maximum price. So that's where the contractor will tell us that they will build that project out for us for not to exceed a certain dollar amount. And we get to go from there, and as we work together through the construction process, if there are any reductions in the estimated costs, we get to take those back and do what we call betterments, which is we'll have a list of things that we would like to add to the project that we can then add in as we go. So they build a bit of contingency into that guaranteed maximum price that hopefully if we don't run into any significant issues, we get to buy that back and do better things. So that's where we're at. Still on target for some demolition work probably occurring in the summer. So that's all I have on the Recovery Center. Oh, and we did get, I think I might mention, our in the final state budget that is headed to the governor's office, we were successful in getting another $1.5 million appropriation going toward that project to help close that gap we had and what the expected costs would be.
Just that. Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
So again, for that engineering and the narrowing down of the architectural plans, what phase level is that for?
So that's for the first four programs that we're looking at are the crisis relief center, which is the old 23-hour observation, crisis stabilization unit, secure withdrawal management or detox, and then the residential treatment facility.
So that's for all four of them?
All four.
Thank you.
I was just going to ask, where do you see the advisory board supporting you in the building of the structure and the of the, those programs within the building. So where do you see us supporting?
I think, I mean, I think when we have that initial layout, I think we could bring that back and ask, you know, is this something that the board is comfortable with? Obviously, we have, our provider is involved in that. And we do have a few people who are on this board who sit on the executive team, helps guide those decisions. But it'd still be good to have input. I really think where the advisory board is going to come in is building out of how, you know, when we get the negotiations going more with comprehensive, is how the programming is going to look. Making sure that this committee feels like what they're presenting is what the community ultimately wants to see. So I really feel like that's going to be all the construction. We're constrained a bit. We have to fit a certain space and certain layout within a certain building. There's not a lot of options. It fits here or it doesn't. So I don't want to spend a bunch. Open through floor plans and things and people saying, build this, build this, build this. And then the architect comes back and says, yeah, that can't fit or that would be too expensive. So the team, luckily, the architect has extensive knowledge and experience doing these types of facilities. And so they've got a lot of good thoughts and ideas and working closely with comprehensive as we're going through that. So I see us being more involved with the community along the programming side of things.
So a couple of questions that I don't think you're going to have answers to. It'd be great to see if we can get them on a future agenda, maybe. Is there a way just to get kind of a timeline or an estimate on deliverables? You know, we expect design to be done here. We expect construction to start here. We expect business planning to be done here. Just a flow so that we see the next 12, 24 months.
They have a rough outline.
That'd be great. Yeah. And if I missed that, I apologize.
No, I haven't presented it, and I think I'll ask them to go back and say, okay, now that we're here,
got it.
Is this still valid? And then I would take it. Their presentation is a very complicated schedule. I think we probably distill that down a little easier to read.
Okay. And then I think the second request was when the public hospital district was exploring this project, there was some business planning involved related to expenses to operate and revenue that comes in to hopefully get to what that delta is that we need to subsidize with tax revenue. Has that been done yet? And could we have a presentation specifically on that?
We haven't done that yet. And primarily the reason we're waiting on that is in order for comprehensive to give us a good idea of what they think it will cost, they need to know what the layout is going to look like so that they can develop a staffing model. Okay. That will help drive that. And so until we've gotten down to where we're very confident that the layout's not going to change, we're holding off on having that final conversation.
Could you make sure that piece is in that kind of flow? We expect that to come here. I think that's the most critical concern, trying to figure out funding wise, what of the dollars coming in is going to be needed to sustain that facility. Thank you.
Right, because I think it goes the other way too, because the structural building of it is also dependent upon estimated revenue and bed capacity, right? So I think it goes both ways.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a circular relationship.
Yeah.
We've got to get to the point of one where we can then say, okay, we're comfortable now making a decision on the other.
Other questions? All right, moving on to each of the subcommittees, we added a agenda item that'll be a standing item for future meetings. If the subcommittee did not meet, it's okay. You don't have to meet every month, but we decided we'd put that on there just because I think it keeps it in the forefront of our minds that there's work to be done and an opportunity to kind of update what's been going on in that respect. So this committee, subcommittee would be substance use disorder service. Did that committee meet this last month?
Yes, and I have an update to share.
Okay.
Potential proposal.
All right.
Okay, so we did meet and we'd like to suggest some further discussion around possibly funding some peer support specialists. In our community, we're proposing operating dollars be used to hire, train, and deploy peer support specialists to engage patients in the community and to engage them in navigating recovery support services. We also anticipate that those services would work very closely with the new sobering center when that's ready. In the meantime, we were thinking that our peer support specialists could engage patients and help them, you know, navigate towards recovery, perhaps line up assessments and outpatient appointments, and possibly help them coordinate inpatient services, knowing that we don't have any here, but that we may need to also bring in needs of transportation until we do have our recovery center in place. But to kind of kick this off with maybe an RFP for a pilot and contract with some of our other outpatient organizations, offer that up as a potential RFP. We know that it's a program, it has been, I'm not sure if it's still happening in the East, it's Spokane, where an outpatient provider is actually deploying a peer support specialist to the community every day and connecting with the patients there and trying to connect them to services. So that was something that we talked about and wanted to bring back to the larger committee for discussion and potential movement.
We had that program already in the counties, it's the pathfinder program. We are exactly describing exactly what it's doing right now. I was thinking in a proposal, and I have some papers that I'd like to share with you. We have right here, they're all, he's one of the three specialists pathfinder. And exactly what it describes, what it does, is engage what happened with the community. It's an in outreach, they want outside, meeting with the clients where they are, the Union West Commission, part of the bridge, whatever it is. Take it to the crisis triage, send it to treatment. And we use also Clean Sweep, they are help us to transport clients out of the county that we pay for the transportation. So it's something that we can, what we would like to, what we do, I think, let's see.
About expanding. So is the need greater than?
Oh, yes. Yes, because right here, they're okay, when you have stand here and explain exactly, the demand is high. The demand is high for services, and they deliver the market to the community. It's worse, not just in that specific, they go out and deliver people there. The numbers, we have a specific target that we already overpassed. In 3 months, we overpassed the target for the probably 4 times. And they can serve anybody in the community, regardless the insurance, regardless the where they want to go, if they want to go to comprehensive, please take it to comprehensive, they want to La Clinica, wherever they want to go.
So we definitely see that as partnering really closely with like fire departments, with their navigator program, a lot of warm handoffs there. So where would they?
Oh, just a quick question. A couple of the other counties in the state also have similar program, but even more in depth with the EDs as far as MOUs, because they do overdose response after, you know, potential overdose response. So really intentional population work with that group.
Yeah, I think incorporating that work, Narcan distribution.
Or, yeah, I mean, those or whatever. Exactly. And linkage to care, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You know, this was a bad situation. Let's not be here again.
You mentioned the recovery navigator. That was a question I was asked. How is this different than or related to the recovery navigator program? Because the fire department's had, and there's another, and I don't know the name of their resources. Yeah, they have. And so how is this tied into that or different than that? Or?
Well, I think the fire departments are really focused on folks that overuse resources, right? A lot of 911 calls, a lot of visits, that sort of thing.
Correct.
Right? Yeah, where this might not be, you know, somebody that, I mean, it comes on their radar after a while, not on the first call. Where this would be somebody who would be available, it could be the first episode, you know, we don't have to wait until the 10th.
What about Merritt?
Merritt. Yeah, so that's the Recovery Navigator Program, which is through the CJTA.
Right.
And it's more diversion based, so they're dealing a lot with the jails, but they're also out in the community as well, trying to get people that are connected to treatment. So much like what, you know, fire department boards is all doing, they're all doing the same thing. It's just different entities, their own recovery programs, peer support specialists. So, but we normally have one or two of the navigators are in custodies every day, and they're in jail, going around, popping around, trying to get the guys that are in custody connected to services.
Sounds like if this was something we're interested in, we may not need to create something new. There's programs in the community already. We just need to partner with them and look at how those can be expanded.
And like the field, there's the co-responder program, the field responder program. And that was one of the things of trying to get the peer support specialists in there. So when they're dispatching, they're doing that as well.
I think we're really primarily looking at the ERs, you know, the emergency departments. I don't know that currently we have a lot of folks grounding in the EDs every day and catching folks there.
But like Mauricio's program, we said, hey, we would potentially fund to have you put somebody in an ER in each ER.
Yeah, it's something that we are working for the last year with people in the hospital. It's not easy. The providers have their own decision making, and that it's just to go there and change the mentality of how the emergency room system works. But we are working there. We are slowly getting there.
Yeah, and I think the really warm linkage is the fire departments who are already trying to do this to some degree. And our fire departments know all the ERs, right? I mean, I think if we could create some sort of a, you know, name with the EDs, we could probably figure out how to make that happen.
Right.
It's well liked in Spokane. They know that the person is always going to show up around noon, you know, every day or a couple times a week, and they can tell them exactly who to follow up with, you know. So I think it's a way for us to put boots on the ground before the completion of the recovery center and tie, you know, to the sobering services and the eventual recovery center.
And just quick question, is that the program in Spokane, is it 100% funded by a grant or by public dollars, or is it something that there are billable services?
No, so I can say for the Pathfinder program, it's 100% funded through healthcare autonomy program. Regardless, it's just, they give me like, except for like $120,000, that's it for the program. And they have other, and they also have other funds coming for basic needs. Like we provide bus passes for recovery, for going to treatment, food, different things that we can cut for the clients. And we use that, and let's say that usually we are using for clean swing to transport clients to rehab.
I brought a few copies of the healthcare authorities and information around the reimbursement of the services. But I think that from what I learned from Joelle, it seems that it would be using the operating dollars and not something that's reimbursable unless it's part of another service, right? Unless they're already in treatment, you're getting reimbursed for something, then you can reimburse for this as well. So that's what we're looking at.
Don't we have a resolution in place that we won't consider funding anything until we have a firm budget for the recovery center? So I would say if this is HCA grant funded, go to the HCA, but I don't think we can divert our resources until this recovery center is open and running.
I think Mike Gonzalez last month had a conversation that said they would. I mean, they have the authority, each county has the authority to, the commissioners have the authority to make those decisions regardless of what request comes from the advisory committee.
Right. And that is the case.
And I was thinking about that also because when I was working in some proposal as well, I checked what is the population growth forecast for Tri-Cities. And it is in the next 7 years, it's expected to grow between 10,000 or 40,000 more residents in Tri-Cities. What that means is going to be more services needed. We have not the grandfather capacity, and also it's going to increase the tax sale. It's going to be higher. So that we are thinking about that. It's going to be the 30,000 to 40,000 new residences that you have for the city of Triad ratio. So it's only an opportunity for growth, it's just figuring out what is needed in the community.
So I guess one of the questions I have on this from an ignorance perspective, and Carla, I'm going to look at you and you don't want me to look at you. Is there a logic map of, I'm hearing like, well, they do this and we do this and we do this and we do this. I would love a picture of who does this. We're talking about peer support, let's add some. But we have no concept, it seems, of what we already have. Is there a map that outlines that? Is that?
So there's not an existing map that outlines that, but another thing I don't know was going to be on Becky's update is that many members of the SUD subcommittee met with some of my staff who are also supporting the Behavioral Health Committee, not the advisory committee, just the Behavioral Health Committee, who were considering an SUD subgroup to talk about prevention that would also include an asset inventory or an assessment, right?
So I love that asset inventory concept because I hear the concern on spending money, Michelle, and but I also think maybe the best money to spend right now is money to know what's out there and where the gaps are. Because I'm not leaving with a clear understanding of what that looks like.
I agree. And also, you know, the merit program, as I understand, is growing exponentially. They're adding people, they're hiring, they're raising the numbers of people they serve. So we need to know all that. You know, if they don't mind sharing, but they're state funded, it's state navigator program, right?
Yeah, it's through the, with the Blake Fix and so the CJTA.
It runs through GCBA.
So anything that's state funded, I refer to anything that's coming out from our company.
Right, there is SIM mapping, what's the potential percent mapping that's April 2nd.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that.
That's going to try.
These meetings coming up that I haven't figured out what they are.
Initial contact to the end all be all getting.
Okay. So that's on its way. And who's that funded through?
I forget.
The Senator Newhouse.
That's right, and this is the expansion of this.
Right.
Okay, so that's on its way.
Because yeah, that, I agree with you. We don't know what's out there.
Right.
We may be funding something that already exists and we're just not aware of.
And duplicating services rather than providing.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. There's already recovery navigators, peer support specialists.
Right.
In our community, and I think it might be covered, but ultimately getting all the providers that are, you know, employing them, bringing them together and trying to, narrow down the scope and identify everything that each one of them is doing.
So Cameron, is there confidence that for April 2nd, that everybody that needs to be, that we've just referenced today is?
Yeah, there should be people who have knowledge in all the different programs that will be able to say who does what and where our gaps are. And that's what it means to map out what exists and then you can map out where you're going.
And that's substance use specific, right? We're not, it's not.
It'll be all the above behavioral.
It is going to be, okay.
But yeah, the focus is on opioids, fentanyl, so it will be substance use driven, but it'll be.
And do you know how quickly after that meeting, there's a plan for a report to be issued?
I think the other question I have is part of that identifying what services are funded, what services may need additional funding? I mean, because that's a big part of it is, you know, because obviously if there are Medicaid eligible services that we can bill, we don't want to be funding it with,
Right.
you know, this amount of tax or these tax dollars, we could bill Medicaid. So I think that's a part of what's available to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Funny story. I think that's the ultimate goal if I've read Jim Guerrero's, because that's where they want to head with it is what do we have? What services do they offer? How is it paid for? And where are the gaps? And we can then have good decisions on how do we fix the gaps? And I think Congressman Newhouse is looking at, expected to advocate at the federal level for additional funding. But that information would be extremely useful to us to use local funding.
Yes.
Kim, do we have anybody on the SUD subgroup going to that meeting? There are over.
I'm going to, but I'm on the mental health subgroup.
I'm quite on that.
Yeah, I'll be there going.
I'll be.
Okay.
A lot of us.
And we can certainly ask those questions about, you know, make sure that we're looking at those. But that's great that we're going to get that data and we don't have to go anywhere else study it. It's like it's going to come.
Great.
or even whatever we get, to give us enough information to see what else we want to learn and narrow.
Could we possibly add to the agenda to get that, our report on that, the outcome of that at some point? I think a report in April will be a stretch.
I was gonna say probably later, yeah, that's fine.
May at least.
Do you have anything else, Becky?
I don't think so. Did you? Okay.
Thank you, all right. Mental Health Services Subcommittee. They meet.
I think I'm the only one here from that group.
Okay.
And no, we did not meet.
Did not meet, okay. Communication Subcommittee.
We did not meet. The only update I have is that I'll be with Glenn in April to do the radio stuff.
And May, I talked to him and maybe something in May as well.
Okay.
I know, for those, it's been mentioned, for those who don't know, that Glenn has a great connection with KONA and does a weekly radio cast. And so if you have something related to this that you're interested in talking about, be sure you need to be kind of glad who's not here. But he's able to get a spot on the radio and it really goes very, very well. The guys who do it are super friendly. They make it.
It's not nearly as terrifying as you might.
Yeah, you walk in and I was terrified when I had to do it. I thought this was gonna be open. By the time we started talking, it was just like having a conversation. And it was really.
And it's open like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, if there's something you're interested in or you want to share with the community, that's what we're using it as, is that resource to get information out there, so.
Do you have an update on CDC?
Oh, Behavioral Health Workforce.
I checked in with Doug. I haven't heard back from him. I asked if we were at the point where he could come perhaps next month to give an update. And as soon as I hear back from him, I'll notify the folks to put it on the agenda, but I don't have a affirmative update yet in terms of whether it's cleared that remaining compliance hurdle.
Doug is going to be the speaker at the guest speaker at the coalition of March 19th. Wants to listen. The people at this table are invited.
Michelle, going back to communications, I don't know if you want to share anything about the breakfast, but from my perspective as a guest there, it was one of the better communications outreaches that the whole project has had thus far.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you all. We had a wonderful morning. Matt was a speaker. Many.
That one was terrifying.
Many of you in this room are donors, which we appreciate. We made $112,000 in just over an hour.
Wow.
And we will, and donations are still coming in every day to the box. We're gonna outfit that recovery center.
And it was a phenomenal guest list, just in terms of the cross section of the community was there, and the, you know, there were 8 speakers that talked about different aspects of the recovery center, and it was just such a fantastic outreach beyond the fundraising, which is amazing for a first event to get to that point. That's huge, but I felt like it really put this whole thing on the map at a level of detail that a lot of people who are guests there just hadn't had a chance to understand yet.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. I mean, that was the, at my table, that was kind of the conversation afterwards, like, holy cow, I didn't even know all this stuff. This is so great. How can I help? You know, so it was good.
Thank you. Thank you, donors, speakers.
All right, as opportunity for the public to address the committee, is there anybody that would have questions or comments at this time? No comments? Okay, other business.
just a update, we got a, there's another opioid related settlement that is coming to Washington State. I forget which company it is this time, but we're going through the paperwork process of making sure that we're signed up to receive the county's portion of that, and that the local cities all get a whole portion of that too. This one is a little different. The other ones are all structured over a 17-year payment. This one is a single lump sum payment. So there'll be some dollars coming in from that. We're working with the cities in Franklin County to see if everyone wants to pool their dollars together. I had circulated an interlocal agreement. I got some comments back from Kennewick, and I spoke to them again today, so I'm gonna circulate that again to see if we can finalize that agreement, and anybody who wants to participate in sharing that. The idea is that these dollars will be spent and directed towards operation of the recovery center, so that way those funds can come in. They're specifically intended for SUD services, which we're gonna be doing a lot of, so that would be another revenue source for us to have there. More to come on that as we continue those numbers. So far, each of the cities at least, and I know I was working with Sherry, I want to say it was, of Franklin County.
I'm sure.
And she's no longer in that role, so maybe I'll.
Shirley?
Shirley.
Yeah.
And so I'll send it to you and Mike.
Okay.
And see if we can start that.
Okay.
If there's interest there, and yeah, so far, the other city, Richland and Kennewick have both indicated they're interested in just setting their funding towards that. I think Pasco initially had said, yeah, they would be interested in considering that, so it's not anything we're requiring, you know, we're just starting. Benton County's going to spend the money there. We're just offering as, hey, if it's easier for the cities to pool the money, then you don't have to do the reporting or anything like that. County will take care of that, and it all goes into the programs. Something that I'm working on there on the other side of other funding.
The state legislature has just passed a number of bills that are going to be great for the SUD services community. One is they're going to, they are now requiring all schools to have naloxone, not just schools of over 2,000 kids. They're gonna have some tightening up of discharge criteria for inpatient, because there's been some funny business with insurance companies and others figuring out ways to discharge people after only 2 weeks. And they're gonna have to tighten up on that. They're gonna have some reviews of who are you discharging and why, and even have the person who was discharged be able to weigh in with their view of what happened to them. Other things would be warning labels on high potency THC products. And some of these products are incredibly high potency. And there'll now be a point of sale warnings, training for the bud tenders, and some other laws that I can't remember, but 5 or 6 new laws regarding in good improvements, in my view, on the opioid problem.
Madam Mauricio, one question I had during, Marie, I'm not sure that you would know, but during our last meeting, we had some good, robust conversation about possibly revisiting the restrictive covenants that were put in place for the new center. Is there been any traction or any more conversation on revisiting that with LifePoint?
And I know Lee had left a message for me, and it sounds like maybe I was thinking I was going to hear from Mark, but it sounds like they may be waiting for us to propose something. So I wasn't aware of that. So I'm going to hopefully chat with Lee there after the meeting here, and then get something put together and over to David and Mark to say, here's some, you know, is this something you guys would consider, so we can see if we can go. I know our conversations have still been, I spoke with Mark again another time, and the goal is to make sure that people, there's not a hole there in either side, that we don't have something where people get turned away. I think Words has that vision, and we have the same, and so I think there's going to be an opportunity for us to have some sort of partnership to make sure there's not people falling through the gaps.
And forgive me, Mark was the gentleman who was here at the last meeting.
He's a CEO.
Yeah, I was left feeling very hopeful with his commitment to want to push forward and hopefully get something figured out.
So that's something I've got to work on here in the next couple of weeks, to get them over a thought of and get that conversation going.
Would it be possible to get an update on the sobering services?
So I think, and I haven't been directly involved in that, and so Mike has been working more with Mauricio, and you sent over.
We submitted the proposal for that. He's waiting. I know Mike is going to check on that, and he's been busy, but we already submitted. Just waiting for Mike and Matt to let us know what is the next step.
So ultimately, it's Franklin County will take the lead on that contract. That's what we agreed on. And we'll have a separate agreement between the two counties on funding for that.
So we're waiting on?
Mike is going to review the proposal we submitted like a month ago, and he's at this time, that he's going to communicate with Mark, our CEO. But they want to wait for the services to be supposed.
So the dollars are coming out of Franklin County specifically, not by county?
I don't know about that.
No, Franklin County, well, ultimately, what would likely has Franklin County would pay, and then we would have a separate review, we would reimburse Franklin County for sure. But rather than try to run this as a bi-county contract, it's a lot easier if one county takes the lead and flows, pays the bill, and then just builds us. We have our entire human services department is run that way. Benton County needs that, and then we just bill for Franklin County.
Okay, so we're just waiting for Mike to meet with.
Maybe with this, well, our CEO.
Oh, the CEO.
Well, yeah, I don't respect the process of Franklin County, it's a different process, so maybe let us know what is the next step.
Okay.
I'll remind you.
Yeah, I was going to say, because what is our potential start date? What are we hoping to accomplish? What are we shooting for here?
For?
To open that.
But we're the issues with the, I mean, with the building, right? Is that it's not sprinkled, so it, I think.
I think this is something that we have to have the fire department to, you know, walk around and figure out what is needed, and after that, see what we can do.
Yeah, so it's, there's a lot more, I think, that needs to be ironed out before. You know, I think you sort of talked about services going in there.
Right, so I don't think it'd be the fire department, it might be submitting your plans at the city, and the city planner would take a look at.
Yeah.
Now you said there's maybe a change in the requested money from the original RFP. So what are the additional services or monies that you're looking for?
One of the things that we have is SUDPT there, working with the staff and more security and more staffing to be able to provide transportation to the emergency rooms, because we hear the MIS, or sometimes they don't have the capacity to do that. But we have people in the sovereign center that can take somebody to the emergency room right away. It's going to be probably easier to wish, because besides the, you know, provide services for, like, the mobile outreach, sorry, mobile outreach, like Pathfinder, the government navigator has an offices there, and working together, all people around soon, and moving people, clients to a crisis, the crisis stabilization unit or rehab. That is going to be the key for moving people as soon as possible.
I like the idea of more staffing there and an SUD person there. I remember one of the biggest problems we ran into with the social detox that we had years and years ago. Law enforcement can probably attest, they would take individuals there and bring them there to get help. A lot of times before they were pulling out the parking lot, they were out the back door, back out on the street.
I worked there for 7 years. Sometimes use just the taxi just to get to Pasco and leave.
Into that side of the city, yeah.
But it's something that, where we try to do, like, having more peer specialists, because they can have a connection with the client, they know what they went through. It's easy to engage, because if we have people that don't have the experience and try to do, engage with somebody who is in need, there is, it's not gonna work, because somebody who knows, understand the what they went through. It's a positive outcomes.
So then the initial funding, I believe, was right under about 700,000.
Something like that.
What was it going to change to?
I think they went to 800,000 to $1 million. One of the main problems that I oversee is the current market right now for salaries is increasing. So one of the main things that we want to be sure, and I right here is to try to be sure that we don't destabilize the workforce, the behavioral health workforce in Bay Cities, because if the salaries go so high, they are gonna be the small agencies gonna suffer for paying more people and it's gonna shut down. You know, that's, you know, we have a balance between having the workforce in Bay Cities. That's just the, you see, we have like small agencies doing a really good job, but they offer $5 more than other ones, everybody left. That population is gonna be alone. So we wanna be sure that we are responsible for.
So if you could just clarify how that's applicable to the cost rendered, was the concern that it was too high or was the concern it was too low?
The current market is in Bay Cities is increasing. So we wanna be sure that we have the lowest, the middle one, the highest one.
So some of the costs increase in order to be aligned with salaries in the sector. Okay.
Yeah, but the main thing is we want to be sure that we're not destabilize the workforce because it's a race, a long term. Because right now, six salaries, I said everybody can do this, they can't get the right thing for the experience, but sometimes you have high school and they're getting like $24 an hour, $24 an hour. So if you have somebody has a bachelor level, it's gonna be like $35, $40 an hour. Master is gonna be like, so it's something that we have to consider a bit.
Last question. So it's kind of refresh my memory, but the money for the RFP, was that just an initial funds to get you started, or is this like an ongoing cost for yearly?
Yeah, because the main problem with the the sovereign center is the reimbursement is really low for that. So when I used to work at detox, the detox closed for the funding, the lot of funding, because sometimes you can have, you have an example 12 FTEs, but you don't have any clients, have to pay for that. It's gonna be over time, it's gonna be, you wanna have a deficit for $500,000, $1 million, who's gonna pay for that? So if we want to be sure that the police or the community has the services available, they have to be funded all the time. That specific service. Because the reimbursement is really low for detox.
I think maybe piggybacking off of that, I think my only concern I've had with regard to the sobering services, I recall when we had our social detox, and it was closed, quite frankly, because they had an average daily census of two people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, I think, also having an idea of, okay, well, you know, how to, it's I think it's a little different narrative when you have someone who's maybe experiencing a psychotic episode because they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and you need to sign a court order and put them in a swim facility versus a voluntary option that, again, I remember having conversations with you when the county operated crisis, where, you know, there'd be someone that would be dropped off and they would literally walk out the door, and I get there are peer supports that would encourage people to stay. But there's also a, you know, at some point we need to have an idea of the value, the cost for value of the service. And if it's so expensive and identifying how big that need is for that specific service, I don't think I've heard anything that identifies how many people do we think would, you know, on average of the day would benefit from that service. Maybe it's gone up significantly from, you know, when I was, you know, kind of working in that field, but.
Well, I'll give you an example. We have clients that are able to access the crisis services because they don't get a critical necessity for the level of care. So, and they will go for for fentanyl or alcohol. So what we can do for them, we try to find the right placement or taking out the counties, finding in Spokane or other areas to stay in the hospital. So we don't know exactly how the current population is changed in the last 7 years because we don't have detox, so we don't know. But I know if the emergency rooms maybe can let us know how many people they go in there intoxicated. Or the AMN and emergency response services as well. How many people is required overdoses for alcohol, for fentanyl or opiates, heroin, and things like that.
So, I mean, even knowing what the, those previous numbers were historically, I mean, there's, if, when the inpatient is turned up, there will likely be a requirement for a non-trivial number of folks coming into inpatient that don't have to detox first, right? So that's a, I mean, that's a burden or a headcount that wasn't previously accounted for in the old detox here.
Well, this isn't gonna be, don't do detox, I don't, if I'm not understanding right, they don't do detoxing at the sober brain center, right?
Well, I didn't know, maybe we're talking about two different things, but I was referring specifically to the detox, and because Kyle was talking about historically, some days there would only be two people, and that wasn't. Right, so that, but that was, he wasn't referring to sobering center, he was referring to detox proper with that, and so that was what I was.
We have a situation that we have clients, they need classes, session, but they're on the very first of alcohol, and they need to go to sobering center there, get them for the next level of care, yes. We noticed that increase as well, and also we noticed an increase in overdose for our clients that we saw on the counseling center, and sometimes there's no place to put somebody there. We have to figure out a way, I'll put an example, we had a client in the hospital mission, and they said, we need place for him, we don't have. Guy overdosed and on fentanyl in the parking lot, went to the emergency room, had to be three times resuscitated there, put in ICU. He evaluated and said, there's no graft of the thing, so he can live, and what we did is he said, we put in transitions. Because where was our home call, just put in there, we figured it out. And we was able to transfer him to treatment, and with the recycling suite, provide transportation, and he's been there for long, for like 3 or 4 weeks already. So that's, there is no necessity, but we don't know exactly what is the numbers, because we don't have details. But we can ask the medical room, can probably ask Trios and Lords, ER, they know how many people go there intoxicated, and we can probably ask them.
If they have a, if they use a diagnosis, I can pull it in SS and write it, I have it on my list too.
Well, yeah.
Pull it up on their website.
I think if you ask the ED to just give you a, you know, a narrative number on how many cases they think they see a week, that they don't know what to do with, that they send out the door because they don't have anywhere for them. I think they could probably give you a number now, you know, that would be quicker than trying to go through claims or.
Oh, no, it's you just plug in, you just plug in.
And the health department had a presentation yesterday about the overdosing in the Tri-Cities and in, let's say Washington, I remember one of the nurses, their presentation, and they're in really good presentation, so that's, they had.
So question on the, so the, and you may not have the answer to this, and it's okay, you kind of opened your mouth up, so you're in the hot seat. The $1 million, is that like a floor cost, like that's the basic cost, or is that go up and down?
No, that is something that we can ask the chief financial officer.
Okay.
Because that was who overseen the budget, we could probably have an answer next.
Sure, I was just curious about that, because I, you know, $1 million here, $1 million there, pretty soon you're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, like, is that a floor cost? Does, like, if we needed more services, could you guys expand? If we didn't need quite that much services, could you, you know, adjust accordingly? I guess that's my question.
Are these staff that you could low census or something like that? You know, if you're using a clinical model.
Yeah. And that, you don't have to answer that today, I'm just throwing out there.
Yeah, I will address that with Mark and his director.
We don't want to run your business, but we also want to be good stewards.
No, yeah, we're letter communication is the best way to know what's going on.
I think it's a good reminder that as Franklin County is the recipient of this proposal, asking them to come report back would be a great piece for Franklin County to present on as well. I don't know if the burden's as much on.
Yeah.
On the provider as it is the person that initiated the RFP.
Yeah, we could request an update the next meeting would be great.
Mm-hmm. All right, any other business?
Yes, on another subject. The Recovery Coalition is going to start offering a series of classes on May 7th for 10 weeks. Families of people in addiction. Helping them to understand addiction, strategize on coping mechanisms, have discussions about what affects families. It's free to the participants because we got a grant from Premier Blue Cross. And we will have a professional therapist leading it. And if you know of anybody, any families that are, you know, kind of struggling with those issues, please let them know. Have a flyer that's being made as we speak, and I can send that probably within a few days. We'll take the first 30 people that sign up. And it is free to them.
Great.
All right, any other business? All right. Well, adjourn.